Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, the founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Good evening, everyone. This is Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler, and you are listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. Hey, Rebecca.
Hello, and hello, everybody out there.
Yeah, we're really excited about tonight's show. I mean, we're always excited about tonight's show. This is silly that I keep saying that, but every second and fourth Monday of the month, we come live on the Life Coach Radio Network on Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. And tonight, we're going to be talking about something that's really near and dear to both of our hearts. I've been talking and working with a number of clergy people and people who are leaders in church. And time and time again, we keep hearing the same stories. We keep hearing the same stories that people are working too hard for too long of hours without enough support. They're really feeling burned out. They're trying to figure out how do they make ministry work for them and for their families. So many women that I speak to are moms and wives, as well as pastors in congregations, and often in small congregations, even though we're hearing more and more about women in really large congregations. But large congregations often have large problems. So one of the challenges I think that we face in ministry, Rebecca, is just the amount of work that is sort of expected from the congregation. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, and not that we don't expect to work really hard in our lives and in our ministries. But there are some times when we deal with, you know, unrealistic expectations, and we work in situations where we're trying to solve issues that maybe the congregation has had for decades or even generations, and it's an ongoing challenge. I'm wondering, you know, what have you seen? Certainly, and I just want to say at the outset, for everyone out there, I'm speaking in very general terms, and I'm not trying to tell tales out of school about the church, right, or about ministry, but I think I didn't know what was possible and what challenges I might be facing when I went into ministry. And as a first-year seminarian, Rebecca, I'm wondering, you know, what you're seeing, what you're hearing from your colleagues and your fellow students about some of these challenges, and I think especially how they pertain to women in ministry.
I mean, I think the dirty little secret of church is that it's made up of human beings, and you know, that what that means is that everyone who walks through the doors are bringing their baggage. Many times they're bringing it to unload, either on their neighbor or on their pastor, or and you know, frankly, that happens in seminary too. We have, you know, it's not unheard of. It's certainly not uncommon for people to come to seminary to find God, to reconcile with God, to wrestle with God. And that's a heavy, you know, that's sort of a heavy environment. The way that that translates into a worshiping community as opposed to an academic community is that you're dealing with a vast, you know, we deal with the, with all kinds, if you will, children, adults, you know, it's very common in my area for people to talk about being a recovering Catholic, you know, people who have been, you know, grew up in a certain tradition and are seeking something else, people who have been damaged by the church. So, you know, we come, Jen and I mean, Jen, you know this, we come as healers, listeners, and leaders. The other dirty little secret is that we have our own baggage.
Boy, and that isn't even much of a secret. You know, I know that Henry Nouwen, who was the chaplain at Yale for many, many years, always used to talk about pastors as being wounded healers. That, you know, we have our own wounds. And as you were saying, Rebecca, I mean, some folks come to seminary in order to try and heal those wounds.
Yep.
Not necessarily that I'm sure that's the best place to try and do that, but certainly it's understandable that, it's understandable that we come with all of our stuff, with all of our baggage, with all of our wounds. And we are at the same time called to care for God's people and to lead God's people and to figure out, you know, what does that look like for me? What does that look like for you?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, what are, it's now been 15 years since I started seminary, which is really hard for me to believe. And so I'm much farther away from the whole seminary experience than you are, Rebecca. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, what are the conversations that folks are having? And I know that Union is a pretty unique place.
Mm-hmm.
Union Seminary in the city of New York is a very progressive seminary. You know, they are preparing people for ministry, but ministry in a very broad sense of what that looks like and what, even, you know, how to define what church is for, you know, for all intent and purposes. So I'm just wondering, you know, what are some of the conversations that you all are having with regards to ministry in the church and, you know, what you're facing as you move into this different way of kind of being in the world?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing that I'm feeling, and this is something that I became aware of before I started classes at the beginning of the semester, was that anybody who's going into ministry now is going into a very, very different ministry than was around maybe 20 years ago and prior. You know, the church is changing. The church is changing dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And we are dealing with that. We're dealing with the fact that the most segregated time during the week is on Sunday morning. We're dealing with, you know, a community of LGBTQ folks who are trying to find church homes and trying to reconcile with the pain of being rejected by the church. And so
And that's certainly something that 30 years ago people, of course there were gay and lesbian people in the church, but they weren't out.
Right.
You know, they may have come to church, they may have served in our churches.
Sure.
But they weren't
out. Nobody. And we
I just want to, before we go further, Rebecca,
I just want to
tell people the call-in number.
Because
I realized that I didn't say that at the top of the hour.
We're about 10 minutes
into our show, and I haven't invited people to join the conversation. So if you're interested, if you have a question or you have a comment, you want to join our conversation, we would welcome that.
Yeah.
Our guest calling number is area code 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. And make sure that you push the number 1, and that will pop up on the screen with a little question mark for me, which means that you have a question or a comment. Because sometimes we do have folks who just want to listen. They don't have access to their computer, but they want to listen to the conversation live, so they dial in. That's another way that folks can connect with us. So, so Rebecca, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to get that in.
That was important. So I think that's a big thing that we're talking about in seminary is, like, what does it mean to minister to not just your people, but to all of God's people? And that's a tall order. And the other thing that's happening in seminary, I think now, I'm seeing this, I think, at Union and maybe, other seminaries are not like this, I'm not sure. But, there are a lot of women in ministry and a lot of young women coming out of seminary right now and smart, driven, intellectual, women who are, being put into positions in the church that are really, really important. And I think that's a good thing. I also think that the church is going to have to deal with some real glass ceiling issues. We're going to have to deal as a society with, and that includes, churches that don't ordain women and, the fact that there are more women pastors in associate positions than there are in any other, than in senior positions in churches.
Just to launch on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we have seen, an uptick in women in significant pastorates in large, significant churches. So we've got Shannon Kirshner at Fourth Presbyterian Church in Chicago, Amy Butler at the Riverside Church in New York City. There are more and more women who are being called to these positions of, in very prominent pulpits throughout the country, and that is exciting. But again, as you were just mentioning with the women are way more likely to be called as associate pastors than as senior pastors. As many of our listeners know, my husband is also a pastor, and he does interim ministry in the Presbyterian Church. So he's not often a person who is charged in hiring an installed associate pastor.
Right.
So in all of the churches that he served, this church that he's serving in right now is the first church where he is working with an installed associate male pastor who is in his first call out of seminary, and he's serving as the associate pastor for children and youth or youth and families. That he's got the youth portfolio, and it's just interesting because I think it does point out the fact so many in these multi-staff churches. Much more common.
How many churches has Gavin served that have been women?
Where he's had associate pastors.
Yeah, as
this
women.
This is his seventh, and so this is the seventh church, and he's had an associate in all of them, and they've been all women except until this church.
Right.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think it just raises the question too. So women are going into associate positions, but even more so than that, women are going into small churches.
That's right.
Exactly. Congregations that are halftime calls or maybe a yoked call. So you've got, you might be full-time, but you might serve two or three churches.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing, you know, you're preaching two or three times on a Sunday morning in different places because the churches have made this arrangement so that you can get from one to the other. You know, that's also not uncommon place for women to find themselves. And what I find another dynamic that I'm seeing and I'm hearing from the women pastors that I'm in conversation with is that it might have been easy for them to get their first call out of seminary.
Yeah.
Or, you know, easy-ish to get called their first time out of seminary, but especially for older women who
mm-hmm.
are now looking to a second or third call, the amount of time that it's taking them to find a call
wow.
is can be 6 months, a year,
wow.
2 years. You know, and if they're out of work, then you know, exacerbate that time, expand that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, talk about some of the dirty little secrets that we're not talking about that women are dealing with in ministry. It steps.
Yep.
And
yeah.
there's just
yeah.
challenges that that people are facing as
yep.
far as, you know, being able to serve. And, you know, we are, and one of the things that I always have to remind myself is that the church, you know, the number of churches and the subset of the Christian church universal that
mm-hmm.
even ordains women
mm-hmm.
is very, very small.
Very small.
So
very small.
If you think about, especially globally, the Roman Catholic Church and more conservative evangelical churches where they don't ordain women at all.
Right.
That those are by far the vast majority of churches. And so even within our small subset, you can
mm-hmm.
see how, that you know, the women are really facing some significant challenges.
I think so. Yeah, and I think that... you know, you were saying about, you know, the women are finding it easy to get a first call. You know, you know, the cynic in me feels like that that's because most of those women are younger and perhaps are seen as though that they can be molded and pushed around a little bit. And I think that that is something that I'm hoping to see change. As far as, you know, who's coming out of seminary now, and the fact that, like I said, there are so many women coming out of in this seminary, anyway, I can speak for, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, there's an opportunity there to, you know, really show real leadership and be allowed to show real leadership without, you know, being told how to lead.
Right. No, and I couldn't agree more. And I think one of the challenges is that unless women's leadership looks like men's leadership, then
absolutely,
it's not recognized as leadership.
You're right, and
so,
isn't this a problem? Like, I feel like we're having to act like men in order to, you know, to have a, you know, to have kind of a place. And I was having this discussion with a friend of mine recently, you know, that was saying, well, you know, you have to really, you know, women have to, you know, they have to be tough and they have to be, you know, they have to have a thick skin and they have to have all this. And I was like, well, no, like, why is that what qualifies me as a good leader? you know, like the fact that I have to embody all of these, quote, you know, masculine identity goals. And even why is it, you know, I mean, we can get into a whole feminist thing, but like, you know, or gender role thing, but why is it, you know, why is it considered valuable for a man to embody those, you know, those traits to be a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the church, you know, we have to really think about, you know, what the church needs. And of course, individual churches have different, have individual needs. You know, I work with children, y'all, you know, people who listen regularly know that I work as the children's music minister at First Presbyterian Church in the city of New York. And, you know, that's a particularly, well, it's a really fun position. You know, I get to be with kids all the time. But again, you know, it's a position that's seems to be more suited, and I'm not saying this is what I think, but it is viewed as more suited for women. Women are more nurturing, women are more patient, women are more, you know, all of these things. And the truth is that I don't wholeheartedly disagree with that. I just feel that my ministry with the children is not any less important or vital as the ministry, you know, the adult ministry or the you know, what the senior pastor does, you know, every Sunday morning when he preaches. And I think that's what more, in fact, I don't even love the term associate pastor. You know, I think that each leadership position in the church is crucial and vital. And as long as we are, you know, lining up people's leadership roles in order of importance or in order of relevance, then women are always going to be, they're always going to be down lower. So, you know, it's important for me in my ministry to adopt, you know, on my own, the fact that my job is just as important and necessary as the job as a senior pastor. And, you know, people will come along with me on that. And it's certainly an uphill battle, but, you know, I see people coming along with us on that. So it's a tough, mm-hmm. it's a tough thing, but I think there are answers out there for women in the church to not be marginalized somewhere.
Right. Yeah, no. And again, as I was saying, I've seen this over and over and over again in the clients that I work with and the women that I serve who are in, many of whom are in associate pastor roles or in co-pastorates, but in, you know, in relationship with male pastors sort of being their head of staff. And
right.
some of those relationships work really well, and other times they don't. I want to, again, give folks the call-in number that if you're listening and you want to join the conversation live, you can tell that, you know, Rebecca and I sometimes talk over each other. We're trying to get our rhythm down so that we do that a little bit less, but we are welcome whomever to call and bring your questions or your comments on this, I think, very important topic. As we think about, you know, the ways in which, too, that women can support each other. So I'd like to, you know, really use this second half of our hour tonight to talk, not just to sit and identify the problem, which I think we've done pretty well, but maybe think through what are some ways that that we can support one another in ministry. What are some ways that women who are in challenging situations can get self-care and can get maybe even the coaching that they need in order to be able to work through whatever is happening in their ministry. So our call-in number is area code 646
646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. Now, I know that I've talked about this some on our previous broadcasts, and but I'm not sure exactly how much I've talked about really the specifics of the kind of work that I do with women and with men who are leaders in congregation, who are really the folks who come to me. I find the overarching theme is they want to do things differently. They want to do things better. They want to figure out, you know, how can I really be a good, strong leader in this congregation for this group of people that I really love. But they're also dealing with how can I do this in a way that's not only life-giving for the church, but that's life-giving for me. How can I do this in a way that allows me to stay in this for the long haul? You know, I think there are a lot of women who have just been giving and giving and giving, and they've been giving to their church congregations, and they've been giving to their families, and they've been giving to their children and their husbands and their, you know, all of the ways in which they're being called to give in their congregations. And it really starts sucking the life out of you at some point. And and that concerns me. It concerns me because I love the church. Mm-hmm. It concerns me because I love my colleagues. And I do so passionately believe that we need women and women's voices and women's gifts, congregational and pastoral ministry. And I'm passionate because of women like you, Rebecca, who are my dearest, closest friends, who are starting out in ministry, and how can I, you know, support you as you go through both your training and thinking about, you know, how those questions about leadership, how can I be a leader in a way that does give life to my congregation, but at the same time doesn't cost me my own life.
Yeah,
I am. You know, I often will say to folks, both women and men, that, you know, because I really do believe this with every ounce of my being, you know, Jesus was the Savior so that we don't have to be. God doesn't call us give all of our everything in ministry. Now, it doesn't mean that ministry is a nine-to-fiver.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you don't take it home with you. It doesn't mean that you're not on call. You certainly are. But figuring out for you where those boundaries are and helping congregations to understand boundaries and what's an, you know, what qualifies as an emergency and what can wait till tomorrow. You know, what qualifies as something that would, you know, you need for me to attend to on the day when I'm taking Sabbath? And what really and truly can wait until I'm back in the office? And, you know, there's all these factors that go into figuring out where those boundaries should be. You know, are you in a congregation of 35 people? And, you know, they're very pastor centered. And, you know, and again, that doesn't mean you don't have boundaries in that situation. You have to, because otherwise you're constantly on call. How can you, as a leader, and I think this is one of the great challenge for all of us in ministry, not just women, is how do we empower our lay people in the congregation to do ministry? To take care of each other, to step up to the plate and not feel that, you know, if I volunteer to do something, that first of all, it's a life sentence because I'm never going to get out of this job because I've volunteered now, which often our churches do. I mean, bless their hearts. but, you know, if they got somebody to volunteer,
love a good
that
sign
means
up
that
sheet.
Person is going to have this job until Jesus comes again.
Yes.
And, you know, and how do we not do that? How do we appropriately empower them to step up and to figure out, you know, what is their place in ministry? What is their place in the mission of the church? How can they really live out their personal call to be a disciple of Jesus Christ? And, I think, you know, of all of the things that they don't teach us in seminary, or at least I should say they didn't teach me when I was in seminary, is how to empower people, how to also not just because it's easier, step in and do
right.
it. As a pastor, and say, well,
exactly.
you know, I can just do this, and what, you know, what are the things that are and the ways in which we approach ministry that is also not, you know, is life giving for us, but it's also really life giving for the church, so that the church doesn't become so dependent on a particular pastor or on the pastoral staff that they don't feel as though they can do things independently of of their pastor, of any of their pastors, without sort of some pastoral support. I'm wondering how that strikes you as someone who's sort of in the midst of starting to think about these things, and even in your, you know, what you do, the work that you do with the children and the volunteers at First Press.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that is, on board. And I think that you said a couple of things that really rang with me. The first thing was that, you know, when a congregant or a potential congregant walks through the doors and wants to get involved, the first thing we should say is, thank you. And the second thing we should say ask is what are your gifts and talents? And you know, I happen to work in a very fortunate situation in which I have congregants who work on Broadway, who are Harvard graduates, or you know, Princeton law professor. I mean, Princeton professors, doctors, lawyers. It's a very, 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 you know, talented, intellectual congregation. And I you know, we have a responsibility to those people to ask them, and like you said, the word empower them to use their gifts and talents or their passion or whatever they're wanting to share, to give them the opportunity to bring it to their community. That's a gift, and that we can give people is a platform or a forum or a space to share of themselves. And I've got a Sunday school teacher who is in theater, and he really wants to do children's theater, and I am all about it. And he is, like, full of ideas. He's energetic. You know, he's an actor, so he's not always working, bless his heart, even though he's extremely talented.
Sure.
Yeah, so he doesn't have, like, a 9-to-5 job, so he can, like, you know, give up his time. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, just in this one person, you know, how much he can bring to our children's ministry. The other thing that you said that struck me is the word Sabbath. And the one thing that I decided when I started seminary was that I would take a Sabbath. And I can't do it on Sunday because I work on Sundays. But I needed to take a day that I don't do anything, that I don't have anywhere to be. I don't have any meetings or any, I don't do any schoolwork. I don't do any work. I just don't do anything. And, you know, I walk my dog, which is very, very, very relaxing. And it is the most amazing experience to be able to do this because...
Yeah, I mean, that's a wonderful example of setting your boundaries.
Yeah.
Of saying, you know, I've got to be able to take a day of Sabbath.
Yeah.
You know, and as we... You know, we preach to our congregants about Sabbath. We really believe that, you know, not necessarily literally, but metaphorically, God created the world in 7 days or in six days and took the seventh day as a day of rest. And, you know, throughout the Old Testament, you hear again and again and again the need for Sabbath, the need for regeneration, the need for being able to let the land lie fallow for a year, every seven years, because we do need that space to rest and to allow our spirits to rest in God, to allow our minds to give our minds space to dream, to imagine, to just, you know, not necessarily be so incredibly focused on the next thing that needs to get done. Because as we know in ministry, there's always the next thing that needs to get done. It's always, and always.
Yeah, and I have a particular advantage. I don't have children or, you know, a partner, so... It's very easy for me to block off a day, to do nothing, you know. But I recently heard someone say, you know, a Sabbath doesn't have to be a whole day. You know, a Sabbath can be an hour.
And that's a really good point. That is a really good point. Because, you know, I know that there are probably folks who are listening here like, a day? Really?
Right.
A day?
Yeah, a day. Yeah, no.
Like, you've
got to
be kidding.
Yeah, that's not realistic for everybody. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I'm not, like, praying or, like, I mean, I literally, like, I order pizza and, you know, I watch movies and, you know, Sabbath is, you know, it's a day, it's a day to connect with whoever you're with, maybe, or to connect with yourself. And however, you know, you do that. And I think that, you know, if you can't do it in a day, you know, I think, you know, for someone who might be thinking secularly, you know, taking a bath could be a Sabbath, you know, just taking a bubble bath or drinking a glass of wine, you know, on the porch can be a Sabbath. Making love can be a Sabbath. You know, all of these things where you get to, you know, be outside of the world for a little bit is a Sabbath. And I think that ministers in church leadership, people, in fairness to congregants, I know that not all congregants feel this way, but or think this or are not or aren't aware of this, but, you know, that's not something that's always given to pastors. I mean, you know, they do have days off, but like you said, setting those boundaries of what is an emergency, you know, when is it appropriate to show up at the pastor's house? When is it appropriate to call them? How many emails, you know, do you send someone in a week? That kind of thing. You know, setting those boundaries is super important, and it's something that not a lot of congregants are always aware of need to be set, and certainly not a lot of ministers know that those boundaries need to be set.
Right, and I think, you know, I know that for us, that because of the type of ministry that Gavin does. He tries to work with congregation so that they expect the next
right.
pastor is going to take a day of Sabbath. And Sabbath
yeah.
means I don't check my email from,
right.
you know, my church email, which means right. if there's something that comes up that's really, really urgent, you know, a congregant dies, someone goes in the hospital, there's some kind of a pastoral emergency, it means you have to pick up the phone and call me on my
right.
cell phone because I'm not
right.
going to be checking email on my day off.
Right.
And also just, you know, giving yourself a bit of time and space away, like you were saying with, you know, taking a bath, having some real downtime. And
mm-hmm.
it might be that this is the time where you really, you find relaxing prayer and meditation because
mm-hmm.
you're feeling so frazzled the
yes.
rest of the week that you just don't feel like you can get to that. And really, you know, and it's going to be about changing congregants' expectations about
yep.
what does care from their pastor look like?
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
looks like there are limits to it. That, you know, as ministers, our job is not necessarily to take care of everything in the congregation, but to create communities where congregants can care for one another. And
yeah.
I think, you know, over and over, and it's so easy to say, and I don't want to in any way really diminish the challenge that I know so many congregants, you know, so many pastors are facing
yes.
with their congregations.
Yes.
They are really stretched beyond their limits, and it's really unfortunate. And the car, you know, and folks don't mean, they don't mean it, you know, they don't mean to burn out
sure.
their pastor.
Right.
but when's the last time, you know, a congregant said to their pastor, when are you taking time away?
Yeah.
When are you taking vacation? When
yeah.
are you going to, you know, create some space so that people feel as though they're not putting their job on the line if they
yeah.
take a vacation? Or they're not,
yeah.
you know, they're not letting the congregation down if they're not instantly available through email or through Facebook or through a text message. You know, all of these things where, you know, we've changed as a society into becoming a very instantaneous society. We expect that, you know, we send an email that we're going to get a response,
yep.
you know, in 10 minutes,
an hour.
In
yeah.
an hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, certainly by the end of the day.
Yep.
And it's really sort of, again, this is some of the counterculturalism of Christianity, the counterculturalism that can really be held up.
Yeah.
In the church is this need for Sabbath and time to just be and be alone so that you have time to recharge your batteries. You have time to attend to the needs of your family, to have a date with your spouse that doesn't involve going to a church. You know, that
right.
is nobody's idea of a date. But,
not.
You know, here we go again. We're in 15 minutes left because our conversation
Ooh.
Always goes so fast. It's
yes.
always crazy, but we've got 15 minutes left. I just want to remind people that if they want to call in, they have a question, they have a comment, they have, you know, they think we're full of crap, you can always do that. Our call-in number is 646-716-9397. It's 646-716-9397. So, Rebecca, you know, one of the things that we had talked about doing tonight was just kind of modeling or doing a bit of coaching. And
yeah.
that I would volunteer to coach you because this
mm-hmm.
is the work that I do. And it's I so feel passionately
that people get to make very clear choices about how they do everything, how they show up in their life, how they show mm-hmm. up with their family, how they show up with mm-hmm. their congregation. Mm-hmm. And the way that we show up with people and the way that we choose to respond, again, sort of, you know, stepping back. And as I like to say to my clients, you know, take a deep breath, smell, you know, sniff it. Does it smell like you're stressed? Mm-hmm. If it doesn't smell like you're stressed, it's not your stress. And don't pick it up. Let the person whose stress it is carry their own stress. You know, another phrase that I've really gotten connected with recently is, you know, not my circus, not my monkeys. Mm-hmm. This is not, you know, whatever the stress is that and the mm-hmm. pain that, and it doesn't mean that we don't appreciate our congregants. There are times when, you know what, their issues are just that. They're their yeah. issues.
Yep.
And as caregivers, though, we so want to take up, and sometimes inappropriately, and carry their issues for them.
Sure.
And really? In the end, that doesn't end up, you know, helping them or helping you. So,
yeah.
So just to start, to start our work together, where we're going to kind of wrap things up tonight, just take a deep breath and breathe in and let it go. Do that again. And let it go. So, Rebecca, I know that you're in the midst of midterms right now. I'm wondering if you're in touch with where your stress is coming from.
I definitely am in touch with it. my stress is coming.
And what's that look like? What is that experience for you?
Stress comes from feeling, you know, seminary is both academic and spiritual, which is a constantly colliding phenomenon. And so I'm pretty good spiritually, but it's been a while since I've been in school. So academically, I'm having to step it up. When I get off from here, I'm going to finish my first paper, probably the first academic paper I've written in almost 10 years. I'm among people who are very, very bright, and I'm honored to be among them. A lot of them are fresh out of undergrad, my stress is definitely coming from the academic side, it manifests itself. I'm finding myself doing things that I don't normally do, like drink coffee at 8 o'clock at night and. To study and that kind of thing. I think that's where I feel the most stress, although
it sounds like you're feeling like you need to prove yourself. Is that?
There is a sense of that, absolutely. There is a sense of that. And I'm not quite sure who I need to prove myself to yet, mm-hmm. I'd like to prove, you know, myself to me. But then there's mm-hmm. also other things, and the great, the biggest, you know, group or situation that I would like to be. I don't know if I have to prove myself, but that I want to honor is the church. And, you know, I want to make sure that I'm educating myself and getting the most out of this education so that I can serve.
So if you were able to step back and imagine yourself 3 years from now, looking back on this time.
Yeah.
What? And keeping in mind that you know, your goal is to honor and to serve the church. What would that look like today, in order for you to be able to say, I honored that time that I was in seminary?
I think the biggest thing that I need to be doing here is learning from my classmates and colleagues. The academic work is really important. The historical work, the language, you know, I'm taking Hebrew, I'm taking Old Testament, taking church history, that's all very important, very, very, very important. But the truth is that anybody can pick up a book and read it. Not everybody gets the opportunity to be among these people in this particular setting and in this particular time and place. So I would just say in the first month, you know, I just learned so much from different people and their experiences and their own style of intellect. I was at a study group last night, an Old Testament midterm study group. And I mean, you know, the room of people was just vastly different. I mean, you know, different. It was a very diverse room. And everybody was sort of like, you know, sort of like raring to go to share their gifts, to hey, you know, here are my notes from that day, or, oh, yes, I remember, you know, where that's quoted in the reading, like that kind of thing. And the opportunity to be around those people is really valuable to me. So I just hope that I can continue to take advantage of that, to spend time with these people here. Because after 3 years, we all disperse and go our own way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I thought it was really interesting, and I don't know if you noticed this, but you know, what you were thinking about initially and what that meant to honor the church, to really, you know, buckle down and do really strong academic work.
Right.
And what, when you stepped outside and came back and thought about it from a different perspective, what that would look like. So what is, in the next 24 hours, 48 hours, week, what is it that you want to do in order to be true to that vision of affirming and honoring the church in your life at seminary?
Wow, that's great. Well, let's see. I think the biggest thing I need to do is to get through midterms and keep my head screwed on straight, so that I can function.
So what would that look like?
You know, it means getting enough sleep. It means, you know, knowing when to turn off the screens and knowing when to take a break from studying or not take a break and to really buckle down. And also to not be afraid to ask for help. Not be,
yeah, maybe from some of those people you want to learn from.
Darn right. In fact, so there's a take home essay part to this midterm that I'm taking tomorrow, and up until at one point in the study process, I thought that I was exempt from that essay. And then I found out that I wasn't. And I was really, I had a moment of stress, like a moment. And then I was like, because I didn't have the prompt and I just didn't like know. And so I just asked my friend, you know, can you just send me the prompt, you know, via email? And he was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, I haven't started mine either. And, you know, that just made me feel so much better, kind of knowing that we're all in the same boat and that
right.
everybody's working to juggle and manage. And, you know, I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job. But yeah, I think just being able to prioritize and put myself first. And when I do that, you know, everything seems to fall into place. I'll let you know in a week.
Well, you know what? It will. It will, you know. And I think, you know, you're doing such a great job. And thank you for playing along with our little, you know,
oh,
our
man,
coaching
thank
session.
You.
But, you know, I mean, sometimes it's just really tough to think through when you're in the moment, you know, what is
yes.
the priority here? What is,
yes.
you know, of course, graduating and
sure.
passing your classes are certainly priorities, and we know that they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, what is the goal? What is the real goal out of this time that you're spending, whether you're in seminary, whether, you know, you're in your first pastorate and
mm-hmm.
you're trying to, you know, you feel like you're drinking from a fire hose because there's just so much coming at you and you're expected to learn so much in a short period of time. And I know that people really feel overwhelmed. And
yep.
I have learned so much from my clients about the importance for them of being able to step back and reprioritize and
yep.
appreciate the fact that in this position, in this job, in this work, their inbox is always going to have stuff in it. It's never
yeah.
going to get emptied, that there is always something more that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if we're always focused on that other stuff that needs to be done, that urgent,
mm-hmm.
we're never able to focus on the important. So,
yep.
you know, and I often talk about, you know, the four quadrants of urgent, non-urgent, important, non-important. And we end up focusing all of our energy on the urgent, non-important
yep.
quadrant intersection. And we lose sight of the fact of the things that are urgent and important absolutely have to happen. But also the non-urgent important is where, you know, it's the easiest thing to skip over.
Absolutely.
Because it's not urgent. It's not demanding your attention. And
right.
yet, it's the important stuff. It's the relationship building. It's the being present in the moment with your colleagues and just and having those deep conversations that you get to have in seminary that you may not have any other time in your life.
That's
so
right. That's
thank
exactly
you
right.
so much.
Yeah.
I hope this was
You're
helpful.
Settling that time in too.
And all of
yeah.
our listeners, I do hope that this is helpful. Maybe it's given you some things to think about. I'm so proud to know you, Rebecca, and to be
Aww.
Part of your support network as
mm.
you go through this process in seminary, because I know that it will be, you will be a real gift to the church. And I think that for so many of us, we really do need to support one another in our ministry, because I
yeah.
think one of the biggest things that pastors face isolation. So
yeah.
For any of the folks who are out there who are listening tonight, know you're not alone. Know that if there's anything that I can do certainly to be of support to you and your ministry, I would encourage you to reach out. Please like us on Facebook. I can't believe it's time to sign off, but it is. So
crazy.
Like Woo. Spiritually Speaking with Jen and Rebecca on Facebook.
Please, if you have any questions or learn more about the coaching and spiritual direction work that I do, go to my website. It's www.jenniferhopekotler.com. I have a new website, new branding, and you can email me at jennifer@jenniferhopekotler.com. And please feel free to just, you know, reach out to us. I'm on Twitter at Coach Rev Jen. Rebecca's on Twitter at A New Rebecca. And yeah. I think A New all the time. Everything is sort of, you know, new for you right now.
Absolutely.
Any last parting words as we sign off for you, Rebecca?
Man, I just want to say thank you to you. You know, I wouldn't be in seminary if it weren't for you and your dear husband, Gavin. And, you know, if anybody out there knows anyone who's going to seminary right now or who is thinking about it, you know, it is a challenging call. And I just encourage people to be supportive of those who are looking to lead the church. And, you know, and I'm grateful for people who are so supportive. So thank you. And thank you for the coaching experience. That was actually really good for me. So thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you all for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks on October the 13th, Monday, October the 13th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central Time. And we'll be coming to you live from New York City. So
woo-hoo!
I'm looking forward to seeing you face-to-face,
yeah.
And
yeah,
to being present with my community there. So God bless you all and have a great night.
Good night. Bye-bye.